The Psychology of Business Success, Part 1. How to get from where you are now to where you want to go. The psychology of business success is, for most people, the real beginning of success in business. Even people who are already accomplished in some area of the corporate or business world find that going back to the basics, looking at their own attitudes and behavior, will help them either to accelerate in the field they like or to discover new directions for their lives as active entrepreneurs. In a moment, we're going to listen to the opening session of the 2-day course that I teach on success in business, how to start, buy, or build a business with no cash. The phrase no cash has been the attraction for almost everyone who's taken bizarre financing, and the course covers mechanics, the techniques, and the strategies, all the how-tos of no cash business financing. But financing techniques will only be of real value to you when you have your own personal psychology in order. Now, I'm not talking about the kind of sterile clinical psychology that you may have been forced to take in high school or college. No, I'm talking about easy to understand, useful information that can help you solve problems and break through obstacles that are holding you back so that you can get on with the important business of creating all the success you want in your life. You do it through a simple 6-point plan. First, discovering what you love to do most by paying attention to what you dream about. Second, setting goals that support what you want to do. Third, making plans to make it happen. Fourth, taking action on those plans. Fifth, sustaining your commitment to the dream you started out with. And sixth, creating realignment to make sure that everything works together to make it work for you. You'll find those points listed and explained in the text, The Psychology of Business Success, How to Get from Where You Are to Where You Want to Go. Right now, let's join the class. How to establish realistic and dynamic goals. There are two great American dreams. One is the dream to own your own home, and the other is the dream to be in business for yourself. And both of those dreams are embodied in really a third, more encompassing dream, and it's the dream of financial independence. And yet, as pervasive as that American dream is, 98% of our population here in America reach age 65 and have not accumulated sufficient financial resources to be financially independent. Only 2% of our population actually achieve that. Now, I want you to think about something for just a moment. There is not a person in this room who, during his or her productive lifetime, will not see $1 million of earnings go through their hands in their lifetime. I mean, think about it. 40 years of working, all that income that you're going to see over that 40 years, you're going to see over $1 million go through your hands. And yet most people, having seen all that money go through their hands from the top side, watch it drip out through the fingers like sand through the bottom of an hourglass. They reach age 65, and having had all that income all that time, they really virtually have nothing to show for it. And the reason for that is that they didn't properly analyze their situation, set specific goals and plans, and then pursue those plans with a definite purpose. So today we're going to spend a lot of energy on how to get ourselves organized so that that doesn't happen to us, that we get where it is that we want to go. Now, goals are important because they help us to focus our energy. They help us to energize ourselves towards a specific objective. And one of the points I'd like to mention here is the reason, primarily, that 98% of our population can reach age 65 and not have the resources to be financially independent is because so few of people in our population actually have goals. Even fewer write them down once they have them. Even fewer than that read them once they wrote them down. And even fewer than that believe that they can achieve those goals that they wrote down. So for goals to work, you got to have them, you got to write them down, you got to read them on a regular basis, and you got to believe that you're going to be able to achieve those goals by the dates that you've set. Now, I'd like to go through what I call a little psychodrama with you here for just a moment. I'd like each of us to pretend for just a moment that we're all in an airplane and we're flying over the Sahara Desert. And we do have a goal. We have an objective. It's to get to Cairo.
And as we're flying over the Sahara Desert, all of a sudden we hear a sputter, sputter, putt, putt in the right engine, and it dies. And then a sputter, sputter, putt, putt in the left engine, and that dies. And all of a sudden, that plane's coming down. And it crashes into the desert, and somehow, miraculously, we're thrown clear of the wreckage. And we get out, and we dust ourselves off, and we look around, and there's the wreckage of our plane. And as far as we can see us, in any direction that we look, all that we can see is sand. Now, given that set of circumstances, what's the very first thing that we need to be concerned about? What's the very first thing that we need to be concerned about? Survival, right? I mean, hot sun up there, right? We just crashed in the desert, hot sun up there. We got to worry about survival. That's the very first thing we got to worry about. So that being the case, what do we do? Well, we go back into that wreckage, right? And we rummage around through the plane to see if we can find any water, to see if we can find any food, any medical supplies, to see if we find any material that we can use to construct some shade for ourselves from the sun. We try the radio to see if that'll work so we can get some help. Radio's dead. So there we are in the desert, preoccupied for the moment with survival. But after we have found some water, some food, some medical supplies, some material to shade us from the sun, at that point, we've got survival handled for the moment. What's our next objective? What are we going to do then?
Get to Cairo.
Get to Cairo, right? We know it's out there. So the next thing we've got to do is we've got to get to Cairo. So then what are we going to do? Well, we have a goal. Well, that energizes us. That starts to put, again, unseen forces into action. So what do? We go back through the wreckage of the plane. Only this time, we're looking for navigational aids, a compass, a map, a flashlight, so we can perhaps move in the dark without having to walk through the hot sun. We look for those things that will help us to get us to Cairo. Now, after we've got survival handled, we've got our food, our water, our medical supplies, we've got our navigational aids, we've got our compass, our map, what's the very next thing that we have to know in order for us to get to Cairo? Where you're at, right? Because if you think you're 3 miles north of Cairo, when in reality you're 2 miles west of Cairo, are you ever going to get to Cairo? No, you're going to be wandering around that desert for a very, very long time. And so, the point that we're trying to make here is if you're going to get to Cairo, then it's going to be important that you be brutally honest with yourself about where you are right now. And the significance of this is we're going to talk to you about techniques that will take you from where you are, wherever that is, to wherever it is that you want to go, wherever that is. And the two techniques will get you there. But for them to work, you have to be brutally honest with yourself about where you're at right now. You can't kid yourself. You can't tell yourself that you have resources that you don't have. You can't tell yourself that you have strengths that you don't have. And if you have weaknesses, you have to face up to them and recognize that they're weaknesses. And it doesn't matter that you have weaknesses. It doesn't matter that you lack resources. What matters is that you're brutally honest with yourself about where you are right now. Because once you know where you are right now, the techniques and the strategies that you're going to learn will take you from wherever it is that you are right now to wherever it is that your Cairo is. You're going to get there, but it starts with being brutally honest with yourself about where you are right now. Now, I'd like to spend the next few minutes and talk to you a little bit about the subconscious mind. We all have one. Our subconscious mind works for us 24 hours a day and handles for us all the things that our conscious mind doesn't want to be bothered with, from digestion to transfer of fluids in our cells to sickness to health. It handles for us all the things that we call our habit patterns. It does for us all the things that our conscious mind just simply doesn't want to be bothered with all day long. And our subconscious mind is extremely powerful. It knows everything that's going on around us all the time. And I want to give you an example of how powerful your subconscious mind is. Has anybody here in this room ever bought a car that was new for them? Anyone here ever bought a car that was new for you? Okay, just about every hand in the room is up. Okay? Did you notice how on the day that you bought that car and drove it out on that street for the very first time, did you notice how many cars there were out there that day that were just like yours? I mean, they were all over the place, weren't they? Same make, same model, same year, same color. Now, were those, now a week before, did you see all those cars? No. A week later, did you see all those cars? No. What, do you think they all came out to greet you that day? No, those cars were there all the time, weren't they? But you didn't see them. What was different on the day that you bought your car and drove it for the first time? The difference is you were excited about your new purchase, weren't you? Your conscious mind was really in tune with your new car that you just got. And what happened is your subconscious mind, which sees everything, pulled from its entire field of view and brought to the attention of your conscious mind every single car that was on the road that was like yours. You didn't miss one of them. Now, a week before that didn't happen, and a week later that didn't happen. But on the day that you were excited about it, your subconscious mind brought every one of those cars to your attention. Now, what's the significance of this? Is your subconscious mind is aware of everything that goes on all day long, all around you. And all around you are an abundance of opportunities, but you don't see them because your subconscious mind doesn't know to bring them to your attention. The subconscious mind sees them and will bring them to your attention once it is that you energize your conscious mind about where it is that you want to go. All of a sudden, your conscious mind will become energized and focused on your new goals and your new plans. And your subconscious mind will begin pulling from the environment all the opportunities that are there every day, all day long, that you now don't see, and it will start bringing them to your attention. You'll be reading a newspaper, and all of a sudden, your eye will go right to an article that's right on point for the very thing that you're trying to accomplish. All of a sudden, you'll be sitting at a restaurant, and you'll hear a conversation three tables down that's taking place regarding a field of your interest. All of a sudden, things will start to come to your attention. You'll start picking up a book that you never would have picked up before and not know why you picked it up, and in there will be an answer to a problem that you're seeking. When your conscious mind becomes totally energized with a goal and an objective, your subconscious mind becomes a very powerful resource that helps you accomplish it. Now, our subconscious mind first works all day, 24 hours a day, and for most of it, it works negatively. Let's talk a little bit about the subconscious mind and how it works for us on an ongoing basis. The studies that have been done on the subconscious mind tell us that the subconscious mind works on a basis of programs. And those programs were established in our subconscious minds, 85% of them, before we were 11 years old. So our subconscious minds were programmed by the adults in our life, and 85% of that programming was accomplished before we were 11 years old. And so most of us operate with programs that we received in our growing up period, prior to 11 years old. And in some cases, those programs are positive programs, and in some cases, those programs are negative programs. But once our subconscious mind bought the program, from then on, everything that we saw, the way we look at the world, the way the world interacts with us, is colored by the perception of our subconscious mind based on these programs. And I want to give you an example of a program so that you can see how a program actually works. I'm a man, so it's obviously easier a little bit for me to relate to a man's program. And so I'm going to address this question directly to the men in the audience here today. And I'm going to ask you to see if you can't remember when it was the incident where your subconscious mind bought the program that men don't cry. I remember it like it was yesterday. I was sitting in my house in Hempstead, Long Island, in the attic. I was with my dad, and he was working on fixing something up there, and he was sitting down, and he had a long piece of wood in his hand and a real long, sharp knife. And he had the wood, he was resting it on his leg, and he was shaving down the edge of the wood, and all of a sudden, the knife slipped, and it went into his leg, and it put a big gash in his leg. And I remember he dropped the knife in the wood, and he took his hands, and he held it close to reduce or stop the bleeding. And I remember my response to all of this, and I remember looking at him and saying to my dad, Dad, didn't that hurt? And he says, well, sure, son, hurt a lot. And I says, but Dad, you didn't cry. And then I remember my dad looking at me with this stone-cold glare in his eye, saying to me, "Well, son, that's because men don't cry." And that's it. I bought it right there. Men don't cry. And from that day on, tears would not come to these eyes. It didn't matter how painful the physical experience. It didn't matter how painful the emotional experience. From that moment on, tears did not appear in these eyes because my subconscious mind bought it that men don't cry. And from that day on, that's what was true for me. Men don't cry. Well, since then, I've had to learn to cry because it is a good emotional release. But the key is that once our subconscious mind buys a program, it becomes true for us. And let's talk about some of the programs that we bought when we were growing up. Sometimes we heard some of the adults in our life tell us enough times, "You're selfish. Life is tough." Well, we heard life is tough so long, so many times, so often. You know, we bought it. Life is tough. And from that moment on, once our subconscious mind bought that, for us, life has been tough. There's never enough to go around. Hear it enough. We buy it. All of a sudden, we live in a world of scarcity, when in reality, we live in a world of abundance. We hear people telling us when we're growing up, "You're clumsy. You're not as smart as your brother. You're not as smart as Johnny down the block. You'll never amount to anything." These are all things we hear when we're growing up, and if we hear them over and over again, sometimes we buy them. And from the moment we buy them, subconsciously, that's what becomes true for us. Now, there's something else that I'd like to discuss for just a moment, because we're going to talk about how to get rid of those negative programs. But to do that, I want to share a little thought with you. I'm going to give you a set of instructions right now, and I want you to follow these instructions explicitly. And the instructions are, do not think about the Statue of Liberty. What happens? There she is, right? You know, torch, spikes on the hat, the whole thing, right? The subconscious mind does not work in the negative. It only works in the affirmative. Have you ever watched somebody on a diet hang a big do not eat sign on the refrigerator? Okay, what happens? Every time you walk past it, I mean, what registers is eat. And every time you tell yourself don't do something that you don't want to do, what you are doing is reinforcing that behavior. You're reinforcing that pattern in your subconscious mind. Now, I'd like to just tell you a little bit about a place where I grew up in upstate New York. It's a very, very beautiful lake, crystal clear water. The water is so clear that when you get out to where the water is 50, 60 feet deep, you can see the bottom of the lake really clearly. On a clear day, that blue sky reflects off that blue water, creating an azure color to that water. Around this lake are mountains that rise right out of the lake, going up 3,000, 4,000 feet, with cliffs that drop 2,000 and 3,000 feet right down into the side of the lake. Along the bank are gorgeous pine trees with lots of flowers of all different types of multicolors. Now, while I'm describing this, anybody thinking about the Statue of Liberty? No, that's gone, isn't it? What you're focused on is the new image. And so the way you get rid of any of these negative programs that you have is you don't worry about them anymore. Don't think about them. Don't care about them. What you need to do is to get refocused on the positive programs. What do you want to be true for your life now? And get focused on those. And go through exactly the same process. How did you buy the old programs? You heard them over and over and over and over again until you finally bought them. And so now we're going to get into new positive programs, and we're going to repeat them to ourselves over and over and over again until we finally buy the new programs. And the new programs will supplant the old programs. They'll just go away, and we'll be left with a new set of programs that are going to help our subconscious minds to take us where we want to go. Now, I'd like to, again, share another little past experience with you because it's an important part of what we're here to talk about today. When I was a young fellow, about the fifth or sixth grade, I was going to school in New York State, and it was wintertime, and I remember sitting in my classroom, and it started to snow. And sure enough, I'm looking out the window watching all the snowflakes fall. And all of a sudden, my mind starts to drift. You know, I mean, I'm thinking about after school, getting together with my friends, building a snowman, going sleigh riding, having a snowball fight. And as my mind is lost in these visions of what's going to go on after school, all of a sudden I hear this shrill voice from the front of the room. And the shrill voice says, "Gordon, stop daydreaming." Oh, snap to attention, right? Can't daydream. And then I hear from all the adults in my life, "Daydreams are a waste of time. Don't daydream. Dreamers never amount to anything." See? And after a while, your subconscious mind buys that. And so what happens is we shut down all that dream machinery. And the adults who gave us that programming in our life didn't know it, but they did us a very big disservice. The command from the front of that schoolroom should not have been, "Gordon, stop daydreaming." The command from the front of that schoolroom should have been, "Gordon, daydream more constructively." Because daydreaming, visualizing the things we love and want, is a very powerful force in our life. It's the way we communicate to our subconscious mind. You see, the subconscious mind really doesn't deal in words at all. It deals in pictures. And daydreaming, dreaming, is the way we paint pictures for our subconscious mind so it knows what we're excited about. Today, I daydream a lot, and I do it deliberately. In fact, I set time for it. And I let myself think about the beautiful home that I want to live in, the semicircular driveway that comes up to the front, the stone columns that support the portico in the front, what it looks like when I walk into that front door and look to the left and see what the living room looks like, or look to the right and see what the dining room looks like, look at that spiral staircase that goes up to the second floor, walk out the back, see the pool area, look at the beautiful view down past the ocean. I visualize what it's like to drive the Ferrari, and what it's like to put my hands on that steering wheel and take it into those turns and throttle that car down and feel the acceleration. I dream of what it's like to own a specific type of business. I picture what is this company going to look like? What are the executives going to be like? How is it going to feel when I actually interact with these people and start to build something that's my own creation? And as I get in touch with these visions, I am telling my subconscious mind what it is that's important to me. And my subconscious mind becomes energized and starts to pull from the environment everything that's going on around me that I should be aware of to reach where it is that I want to go. So daydreaming is a very important part of getting where you want to go. Now, what happens to our dream machines as we grow older? Well, we start out by having the adults in our life tell us it's no good to dream. Daydreamers never amount to anything. We start to buy that. But even before we've bought that, what happens to us as we're young and we're growing up? We have dreams. We're full of life. And then we go on out to try and get those dreams. But we don't have the resources. We don't have the knowledge. We don't have the tools. And so what happens is, as we're shooting for the stars, as we're going after our dreams, we get punched in the nose. And after a while, our nose gets pretty bloody. And after a while, it starts to be very painful because we hurt, because we want, but we don't know how to achieve. And after a while, the pain becomes so great because we want and we can't achieve that what happens? We shut down that dream machine. Because if you don't dream, then you don't want. And if you don't want, then it doesn't matter that you can't have. And so to avoid the pain, we shut down the dream machine. And so we're going to talk to you about a process that if you will follow this process, you will revitalize your life force. You will become a power to be reckoned with. And the process works like this. Reawaken that dream machine. Because if I were to sit down right now and say to you, okay, write down 10 long-term goals, goals that will take you 60 days or more, and write down 10 short-term goals, goals that you can achieve within 60 days. If you were to sit down and try and write goals, one of the reasons we don't sit down and write goals is we don't have them. We don't know what we really want. So even after we write down some goals on a piece of paper, they're lifeless. They don't mean anything. And so how in the world are we going to pursue goals with vigor when they don't really represent our inner self? So how are we going to get the right goals down on a piece of paper to have them written in the first place? Well, the very first step is to re-energize, reawaken our dream machine. Get in touch with the real us. Figure out, why am I on the planet Earth? Why am I here? What am I here to do? What is me? And start to reawaken that dream machine. And as you reawaken the dream machine and get in touch with what you really want out of life, what you're here to contribute, all of a sudden, those dreams start to rebubble up. They start to emerge. And then from the dream, you now set the goals. And when you set the goals based on your dreams, those dreams become meaningful. They take on fire. They take on an energy of their own that makes us so much more powerful than we could have ever been trying to act out lifeless goals. So the first step is dream the dream again. Wake up that machinery. Then the next step is, from those dreams, you establish realistic goals and meaningful goals to support those dreams. Now, once you've established the goals, there's another step. Because the goals themselves will not get you where you want to go. You need to take those goals and use them to form a plan. A plan of how do you get from where you are now to whatever those goals are that you've established for yourself. So the dreams become goals. The goals translates into a plan of how you're actually going to do this. And then once you've got the plan, what's the next step? Action. You got to get out and do it. And then the final step is commitment. Because once you've gone through and reawakened your dreams, once you've set those goals, once you've developed your plan, once you've moved and you're in action, then you have to have the commitment to see it through, no matter the obstacles. The commitment to hear all the naysayers, to hear all the people who tell you, no, it can't be done. No, you're crazy, you can't do it. The commitment to see it through no matter what. So, the dream, the goal, the plan, the action, the commitment must all be in alignment. And once you've gone through that process, you need to review your dreams, review your plans, review your goals, review the actions you're taking, and make sure they're all in alignment. Make sure they're not going off in different directions. Make sure they're focused. And once you do that, you become like a laser beam and you pierce through whatever obstacles are in your path, and you literally become the most powerful force on the face of the earth. And nothing will stop you from going where it is that you want to go. But it's a process, and you have to be true to it. And if you are, you're going to get there. Now, I want to talk about some programs that we all carry around with us and how they're affecting our lives and our ability to get where we want to go. How many people in this room have a little voice that goes off inside their head whenever times get really tough, you know, things are rough going, and there's this little voice that goes off inside your head that says, I'm a survivor. I can survive anything. How many people here ever heard that little voice go off inside their head? Almost every hand in the room should be up because that's an entrepreneur's program. I'm a survivor. I can survive anything. And most of us have come to think of that as a very positive, strong program. But I will tell you this, and I will tell it to you categorically without exception, that if you are ever, ever going to be successful in your life, it is imperative that you destroy, absolutely destroy that program. That program is a negative program. Because what happens to you is this. Have you ever noticed that you'll start to pursue something in a business venture? Things will start to work out. You'll get right to the peak of where everything's ready to come together, and all of a sudden, for reasons you can't explain, it just fizzles. And it never comes together. Do you know why that happens? Because you're programmed for survival. And the moment you're about to become a success, your subconscious mind is not programmed for success. So what does it do? It goes about whatever it has to do to create you back into where you're back in a survival environment again. Because that's what your subconscious mind is programmed for. It's programmed to be in survival. So if you're going to be successful, how do we get rid of a negative program? Well, we can't tell ourselves, don't do it. We got to replace it with a positive program. And so whenever you hear that little voice go off inside your head and saying, I'm a survivor, I can survive anything, just cut the voice short and replace that statement immediately with I am a success. And think success, not survival. Now, you don't say to yourself, not survival. You just start thinking success. How do I take what's going on in my life right now and make it a platform for more success? You're not here to survive. You're here to be successful. Now, let's take an analytically look at the difference between the way a survival program works and the way a success program works. What's the difference in us if we're in one program versus another program? Here's how a survival program works. It's an action and response program. In other words, what do we know about ourselves? We're pretty good, aren't we? We can handle anything that comes our way. Part of survival, right? We're good. And having that belief in ourselves, what do? Well, we wait for an action. Somebody throws a punch at us. Well, we're good. So what do? We block it. And then we punch back. And boy, we're good. Knock them out every time. Action and response. Now let's look at the difference between that and a success program. A success program is an anticipation and planning program. In a success program, you anticipate that someone's going to throw a punch at you, and then you plan it so that you're nowhere in the vicinity when the punch comes. Anticipation and planning versus action and response. Entrepreneurial people generally are one of the worst planners that there ever are because they have a feeling that they wait for it to happen and they instantly respond and they're always good and they always come through and they always survive. But success means anticipating what's going to happen, organizing, planning, all have a part in being successful. A survival program means you get to win the battles. A success program is you plan it so the war never happens. And let's talk about another program that we carry around as entrepreneurial people. Anybody in this room ever have a little voice go off inside their head? Little voice says, I'm a doer. I can do it better than anybody. How many people have that little voice go off in your head? And again, every hand in the room should be up. It's an entrepreneur's program. In fact, as an entrepreneur in your own business, what's the biggest problem you've got? Getting other people to do something for you anywhere near as good as you can. I mean, what happens when you're in your own business? You delegate a responsibility to somebody, you hand over the project to them, you watch them fumble around with it for a couple of days, and you finally get fed up, you take it away from them, you do it in short order, and there you go. You say to yourself, God, I'm a doer, I do it better than anybody. And one of your biggest problems is you can't get anybody to do it near as well as you can. And I will tell you, if you are ever going to be successful as an entrepreneur, it is imperative that you kill that program. Because how much can you do with your own two hands? How much can you accomplish just these two hands? You can't. If you're going to be successful in business, it is imperative that you leverage yourself through other people, that you get other people to do it for you. And so the program, when you hear that little voice going off inside your head, I'm a doer, I do it better than anybody. The minute you hear that voice, you got to cut the voice short and say, I'm a person who gets other people to do it for me. The most successful people that I know are people who consider themselves inept at anything that they would try to do. And so they're very accustomed to having always other people do it for them. And you know something? If you can get other people to do it for you, if you can learn to motivate other people by creating wins for them so that they win when they do what you want them to do, you become powerful because now you can leverage yourself through many people. And once you learn to do that, you can move mountains. Leveraging yourself through other people. So it's a doer versus the organizer planner. It's the I can do it better than anyone else versus getting other people to do it for you. And you do that by creating wins. Now, one of the frustrations you have the minute you start to do that in business, you hire somebody to do a job, you assign them the task. Most entrepreneurs' idea of training a person to do the task is they tell them for 10 minutes what to do and they walk away and leave them. Then they come back and they notice that it's not done right. So if you're going to be getting other people to do it for you. It means you have to start focusing yourself on being an organizer trainer, an organizer trainer supervisor. So stop doing anything and figure out how you're going to organize, train, and supervise other people who are doing it. And recognize that in the early stages of that process, everybody you assign a task to is going to do it 60%, 40% as well as you do. But you know what? That's the only function they're going to have to worry about. So in a week or two or three, they're going to be 60% as good as you. In a month or two, they're going to be 90% as good as you. And in 6 months, they're going to be 120% as good as you, because that's all they got to worry about is that one thing. So patience, part of that process. So these are two programs, survival and doer, that you must reestablish with a success program and with a program that enables you to get other people to do it for you. Now, when we actually get to sit down to write goals, it's important that they be specific with regard to time and place and date. It's important that they be specific even to the terms of amount. Like, for example, an example of a wrong goal is, I want to make lots of money. You see, your subconscious mind can't identify with that. What's a lot of money? But I will have $10,000 in my checking account by May 31st, 1986. Well, see, that's very specific. Your subconscious mind can get keyed into that and start to know what's necessary to do to accomplish that. I will own my first manufacturing business by December 31st, 1986. And again, the more specific you can be about what that business is actually going to look like or be like, the more your subconscious mind can get tuned into it and start to work to pull from the environment all the things that you need to be successful at accomplishing that objective. So getting these goals, making them specific, very important. We're also going to suggest that you do this, that you get a 3x5 card. And on one side, you list 5 long-term goals, and the other side, 5 short-term goals. And then you review the card to make sure that the short-term and long-term goals each support each other. And a short-term goal, let's say that's one you can accomplish in 30 days or less. And then long-term will be goals that are longer. You read that card 3 times a day throughout the day. You get focused on what those goals are all about so that you keep in front of your subconscious mind on a constant basis what you're trying to accomplish. And then you start to watch how all of a sudden life takes on a totally different complexion. Things will start popping out of the woodwork that'll support your achievement of those goals, because your subconscious mind is aware of everything, and it will start pulling from the environment all those things to make it happen. And one of the great lessons of this is that we do not live in a world of scarcity. We live in a world of abundance, where everything we need is all around us all the time, and it's there for us. And that is a very, very powerful revelation. Now, we're talking today about psychology as well as financial techniques. And so one of the areas of psychology that we need to deal with is not only the psychology of other people, but the psychology of ourselves, because we are the foundation on which we are going to erect our building. We are the base of the structure that we are going to create. And if we're going to build a big building, if we're going to create a big structure, then we have to be a strong base. And one of the problems that we very often have is identifying ourselves as that base. For example, if I were to say to most people in this room, who are you? Who are you? What are you? I would get answers that went something like this. Well, in my own case, I would get, well, I'm a man. I'm 41 years old. I have a family. I own a couple of businesses. And then after that, it gets real tough. You know, like, what are you? Who are you? Well, if you're going to build a really strong base on which to erect your big structure, you got to be darn sure who you are. You got to know who you are. You have to have tremendous amount of self-confidence and a very powerful, positive image of yourself. Because without those things, you can't build a strong building, because who's going to do this? You are. And if you're going to do it and you don't think much of yourself, or you're not sure of yourself, or you're not confident of yourself, well, how in the world are you going to build a big structure on top of that? So you've got to know who you are. You've got to have that self-confidence. You have to have that inner sense of stability, of knowing who you are. And what you need to know is all of the great characteristics that have resided in every human being who has ever walked the planet Earth reside in you. And all you have to do is let it out. And we're going to talk to you for a moment about how to let it out. I went through a period of my life when I wasn't sure who I was. And one of the ways that I learned to find out who I was, to let out that part of me that was me already, that I just didn't know about, was to create a set of I ams. I developed a list of 55 of these things. And three times a day, I would stand in front of a mirror, and I would stand there with my list of I ams, and I would look myself right in the eye in that mirror, and I would tell myself who I am. I wasn't going to leave it to question anymore. I was going to let myself know who I am. And so I listed 11 of these I ams here so that you'd have an idea of what they're all about. And every day, three times a day, when I would say these self things to myself, I would tell myself who I am. I would picture what it's like to be these things, visualize. What does this mean? So I would look at the mirror and I would tell myself, I am wealthy. And then I would visualize, well, what is it like to be wealthy? What does that feel like? What does it mean? And I would allow myself to feel and visualize what it means to be wealthy. I would say to myself, I am powerful. And then I feel, what is it like to be powerful? I am creative. I am dynamic. I am resourceful. I drive a 308 GTS Ferrari. I work in a prestige office with a magnificent view. I have rich and powerful contacts. I am well-traveled. I dine in the finest restaurants. I am happy. And I would say these things over and over and over again to myself, visualizing what it was like to be those things over and over again until my subconscious mind finally bought it that that's who I was. And once my subconscious mind bought it that that's who I am, I became it. Now, you must believe that you can achieve the goals by the deadlines that you have set. You must totally commit yourself to the achievement of those goals once you've written them down. And once you've done that and you've followed the format, the plan of awakening your dreams, using them to vitalize goals, then having a definite plan to pursue those goals, taking that action to go do it, and then having the commitment to see it through no matter what the obstacles, you become an unstoppable force. And you're going to get from wherever it is you are right now to wherever it is that you want to go.
Before we review this section on the psychology of business success, I'd like to ask you a question. What is your personal reaction to the idea that picturing what you want in your mind is essential to your success? Do you accept it as a worthwhile step in getting what you want? Or does it just not seem important to you, a waste of time, too intangible, too irrelevant? If you feel even slightly that what we've just covered is a waste of time, then I want to have a little talk with you right now. First, I'd like you to understand that the idea of seeing what you want in your mind first is not some crazy notion of modern-day self-improvement courses. They've only resurrected the idea which runs through all the wisdom of the ages. Great philosophers and great scriptures refer to the importance and power of creating things in our minds first. Random thoughts produce a random life. Constructive thoughts produce a successful life. And the proof of this is on its application. No really successful person in any field of endeavor, including business, has made their success without constructive daydreaming. They may not have done it consciously, but they did it. And we know they've done it from interviews, personal anecdotes, and biographies. Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, all of the great inventors and entrepreneurs who initiated the modern age of business daydreamed constructively just out of habit. And now we know that there is a scientific reason why constructive daydreaming works. Psychiatrists and brain researchers today are showing us that imagination is not as unreal as we used to think. When you create a picture in your mind, it's not just a figment of your imagination, as we used to call it. It's not just a made-up image that has no place in the real world. At a very subtle level of physics, scientists now tell us your brain actually creates a real thing, an actual form in thought, made of electrical impulses, which is the beginning of a concrete, tangible reality. and it will become tangible if you reinforce it daily with more electrical thought impulses that make it denser and stronger. When you do that with sufficient commitment, then the form becomes physically real. If you still have any doubt about the power of your imagination to change your own life tangibly, I'm going to try to erase those doubts by having you experience firsthand the power of your own creative imagination. I'd like you to picture yourself standing in your kitchen in front of your refrigerator. You open the refrigerator door, and as it swings open, you see on the top shelf a bright, yellow, large, perfectly shaped lemon. You reach in, take this lemon from the refrigerator. You're struck by its wonderful, fresh smell. You can feel that it's full of juice inside, and you bring it closer so you can smell its pungent aroma. You set the lemon on a cutting board and take a knife from the drawer. You steady the lemon with one hand and slowly begin to cut down through it. As you cut the lemon, you feel the lemon oil seeping out of the rind into your hand. You slice further down into the lemon, and as you do, a spray of lemon juice shoots up towards your face, and your mouth puckers. You slice down further into the lemon, and as you cut toward the bottom of the lemon, you feel the acid of the lemon juice against the blade, and the blade squeaks as it cuts through the lemon skin, and then you feel and hear the crunch as the blade snaps through that last edge of lemon rind. The lemon falls open in two perfectly cut halves, and you pick up one of these juicy lemon halves and bring it up to your face, and that tart smell is now almost overpowering. And you gently squeeze the lemon and feel the oil from the rind on your fingers, and you see the juice ready to burst out from the inside where the lemon has been cut, and you bring the lemon closer to your nose to smell it again, and you just barely squeeze the lemon until the first drop starts to form and roll towards the edge of the lemon. As you tilt your head back and open your mouth and hold the lemon over it, and then squeeze all the tangy lemon juice down into your mouth. Now, let me make this statement. If you are not at this moment salivating, then you have not been paying attention. If you have been paying attention, then you have just experienced the fact that your imagination can create a tangible change in your physical life. Remember, your thoughts are real, made of real electrical impulses, and they can make real changes happen in your physical world if you will not only picture what you want, but experience it with your emotions. The business you want to be in, for example. Somewhere out there is a company like the one you want to own. Go there. It doesn't cost anything to window shop. Move through that business. Get the feel of it. See it. Smell it. Listen to the sounds of the business. Telephones ringing. People talking. The sound of machinery. The sounds of the cash register. Touch the things that make that business what it is. The things that you know you'd like to be around in that business. And then take the sights, the sounds, the smells, the touch, and all your other impressions of that business home with you. And re-experience being there every time you state your goals. Goals will do nothing for you if you merely state them out of a sense of duty or as an exercise. But goals take on an enormous power and potential when you invest your entire self in them, when you take the time at the beginning and end of the day to sit down, close your eyes, relax, picture yourself in the experience of the goal already achieved, and all your physical and emotional impressions of the goal just as if they were actually there. That is constructive daydreaming. It's not only productive, but it's fun, if you just allow yourself to get into it and enjoy the feeling of being there. Do that, and you'll actually be in that business before you know it. What we've covered in this section of Bizarre Financing is a 6-step plan that can make things happen for you in a business or any other part of your life. Bizarre Financing will show you how to complete each of those steps in sequence so that you can get from wherever it is that you are now to wherever it is that you want to go. The first step is discover what you love to do by finding out what your real dreams are in life. Reawaken your dream machine. Everybody has one, We just tend to shut them down when we stop being kids. To reawaken your dream machine, notice what you tend to think about when you want to get away from it all. Notice what you look forward to as your mind drifts away from the things you do that you don't want to do. What do you dream about? What would you really like to be doing in life? What would you like to be doing right now? Step number two is goals. Goals are based on your dreams. It's important to base your goals on your dreams because your dreams come from a place within you of unlimited power. And goals pursued with unlimited power can do only one thing. Happen. Write your goals down. Make them specific. Make them realistic. Make them things you can do. And then do whatever you have to do, like visiting the kind of business you want, so you can fully experience in your imagination exactly what it's like to have reached that goal. Make your first goals easily achievable, simple things that you know you can get done. And then build upon your achievement of them so that you eventually challenge yourself with goals that are bigger than any you could feel comfortable with now. It's like physical conditioning or any learning process. Start at the level you're at and then build from there. Step three, plan. Know what you're going to do, why you're going to do it, who you need to make it happen, when and where it will happen, how it will happen, and how much it will cost. Those are the basics of any plan of action. Who, what, when, where, why, how, and how much. Bizarre Financing will take you through each of those basics of planning in a logical sequence of steps that are easy to understand. They're a blueprint that you can refer to at any step along the way so that you'll know what to do and when. You won't ever again have to feel aimless or that you can only hope good things will start happening. You'll learn how to make them happen yourself. Step 4. Take action. Get out of your comfort zone. Turn off that television set. Stretch yourself a little. Most of us tend to get used to a kind of status quo in our lives, the same routines every day, the same TV every night. To be successful, you have to take action that intentionally disrupts the usual order of things, the way a bodybuilder, for example, purposely trains muscles from different angles to keep them awake and growing. As an entrepreneur, you have to intentionally challenge your own behavior patterns, your tendency not to do things, your tendency not to deal with new situations. Take some new action every day, and you'll establish a habit pattern of an active entrepreneur. Step 5. Commitment. Commitment is something you demonstrate by being persistent. It may sound corny, but it's true. Persistency pays. And once you discover what you love to do through your dreams, once you experience your goals as real things before they happen, once you feel the confidence of taking action, then you'll find that commitment and persistency come naturally, because you'll no longer be at odds with yourself. You'll no longer be doing what someone else wants you to do, or what someone once told you you had to do. You'll be doing what's right for you, what you really want to do.